Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. At this time, we would like to welcome everyone to RD People, Health and Wellbeing conference call to discuss fourth quarter of 2017. The audio for this conference is being broadcast simultaneously through the internet on the website www.rd.com.br. In that address, you can also find the slideshow presentation available for the download. We inform that all participants will be only able to listen to the conference during the company's presentation. After the company's remarks are over, there will be a question and answer period. At that time, further instructions will be given. Should any participant need assistance during this conference, please press star zero for an operator. Before proceeding, let me mention that forward-looking statements are being made under the safe harbor of Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1996. Forward-looking statements are based on the beliefs and assumptions of RD management and on information currently available to the company. Forward-looking statements are not guarantees of performance. They involve risks, uncertainties, and assumptions because they relate to the future events and therefore depend on circumstances that may or may not occur in the future. Investors should understand that general economic conditions, industry conditions, and other operating factors could also affect the future results of RD and could cause results to differ materially from those expressed in such forward-looking statements. Today with us are Mr. Marcilio Pousada, CEO, Mr. Eugenio Zagottis, Investor Relations and Corporate Planning Vice President, and Gabriel Rosenberg, IR and Corporate Planning Director. Now, I will turn the conference over to Marcilio Pousada. Sir, you may begin your conference.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the presentation of results of the fourth quarter 2017 RD. As always, Eugenio will present the slides with the results. Before the Q&A, I would like to stress some points. Eugenio, please.
Okay. Hello, everybody. Thank you all for attending our conference call. Just to start with and put in perspective, we believe 2017 was a very good year for the company. We were able to grow top line at a very consistent pace. We gained market share. We had a very accelerated and high-quality expansion. As you all know, we faced tremendous gross margin pressure from the huge inflationary gains of 2016, but we were able to gain productivity and achieve expense dilution in 2017 so as to mitigate and defend our margin. In the end, I think we were successful in doing that. We have the highlights here. We ended the period with 1,610 stores in operation. We opened just in this year 210 new stores and closed 20. We exceeded the guidance of 200 store openings for 2017. We reached a gross revenue of 13.9 billion reais, 17% top-line growth with 7.2% same-store sales for retail. Our gross margin was 28.8%. As I just mentioned, we had an 80 basis points pressure because of the huge inflationary gains of 2016. We were able to offset the bulk of that pressure through a very meaningful expense dilution. In the end, we reached an EBITDA of 1.1 billion, 8.2% of margin. Only 20 basis points of consolidated margin pressure. If we look only at our retail margin on a cost basis without the net present value adjustment, we even gained 10 basis points in our retail operation. Our net income totaled slightly more than half a billion BRL, 3.7%, and we had a negative free cash flow of about 15 million reais, with a total negative cash flow of 211 million reais. Okay, next page four. We have here our historic numbers to put the year into perspective. I think what this chart shows is a very consistent progression, very big top line growth, very big, and increased the number of stores, and also obviously a huge margin gain on top of that. So since 2011, when we merged, we multiplied revenues by two times. Multiplied the store base by two times. We multiplied revenues by roughly three times, and our EBITDA was multiplied by roughly four times. The only reason that makes this possible is that the second half of stores we have had ever since, so half of the stores pre-existed by 2011, so the second half of the total store base is just as good as the legacy stores. So they allowed us to gain scale, to increase productivity, and to boost our margins and returns. We are the only drugstore chain in Brazil who have been able to grow at a fast pace on a national basis while maintaining revenues per store on a constant basis, ex inflation, so as to gain productivity. Nobody else has been able to do that. Nobody. When we talk about the expansion, I can highlight probably the main element on why that's the case and why we believe that to continue to be. On page five, we can also put the in perspective as far as market share. We had a market share of 11.8% for the average of last year. In the end of the year, we were already at 12%. So we see here a very meaningful and consistent market share gain since 2007. When you look at the next three segments, which are other chains, either part of Abrafarma or not part of Abrafarma, and supermarkets, we have seen that these segments have not been able to grow market share in recent years. When we look independent, then we see a slight share gain, but in reality, this figure divides into we have cooperatives, which are small chains, which are independent, with a common brand, mostly popular, who have done relatively well. Then we have pure independents who are doing really poorly right now. But we see that our market share gain, it's different from the rest of the market. And finally, here on the right of the chart, we see pharma revenues per store. This is IMS data. And it's obvious that we have been able to increase at a very meaningful pace our revenues per store, and we built a huge gap over anybody else. So in an industry that's driven by a fixed cost structure, this means that we achieve a much bigger expense dilution at the stores, even though we offer more service than our competitors. So this is a very important and structural competitive advantage. And when we put these two together, which are the scale we have and the efficiency we have, I mean, this is completely different from the rest of the market, and this is what will keep us supporting us to go on growing and creating value. On page six, we ended the year with 1,610 stores by opening 210 stores, 10 more than our guidance, and closing 20 stores. Out of the 20 closures, 7 stores relate to the correction of expansion mistakes, 1 at Farmazio, 6 at the core format, while the rest is portfolio optimizations, either relocating stores or closing stores and transferring revenues to the surviving stores, which creates value for the company. We also see here on the right that 35.6% of our stores, they are still undergoing maturation. So we have now an EBITDA margin of 8.2% on a consolidated basis, and our margin will be much bigger in the longer term when every store becomes mature. Next page, we can discuss our national presence and the main reason that has sustained this kind of value creation from our expansion that nobody else has been able to match. We are now present in 20 Brazilian states that account for 94% of the Brazilian pharmaceutical market. Obviously, two of these states are very recent, Ceará, where we opened 7 stores, and Piauí, where we opened 3 stores last year. But all the others, so these stores are still unproven. We've seen great initial numbers, so it's encouraging, but still too early to tell what we can achieve there. But if we forget those two, we're still talking about 18 states that account for more than 90% of the Brazilian pharmaceutical market, where we have our brand already established. We have very constant revenue per mature stores across all these different markets. We have the capacity to grow in every single market here with consistent marginal returns. We're not the only chain in Brazil to have a national footprint or to have a fully colored map or almost fully colored map. There are others. But we are the only chain in Brazil who makes money on a consistent basis all across this market, who has similar revenues from mature stores all across this market, and who has capacity to invest at similar returns here. So if we define a national chain as one who's able to grow nationally and make money nationally, we are the only national chain in Brazil. So when we grow and we open these 200-plus stores every year, we're swimming in a blue ocean, because the pain from fixing the brand, from getting to the known by the consumer and so on, and the bad initial results, they happen in several markets, but they are far away in the past. Now it's a consistent story. Meanwhile, our competitors are trying to swim on a red ocean, because for them to be able to grow 100 stores or more, they have to enter many new markets in which they arrive at a very late stage, and they will face tremendous bleeding because the new stores, they don't perform in the beginning, huge barriers of entry, gross margin will be lower. So I mean, it's easy, when you look around at our competitors, it's easy to see this picture on the results. I mean, one by one, you can see the difficulty in growing with consistent productivity, and this is something we have by any means achieved. Here on the right, we discuss our progression as far as market shares. We reached, in the end of the period, 12% of national market share by maintaining or gaining share in every single market here. So in Sao Paulo, our market evolved from 22.5 to 22.9, still lower than we believe we can achieve. In the Southeast, it came from 7.7 to 8. In the Midwest, it was constant at 13.1, and you may remember that in previous quarters, we had lost some share here because Brazil Pharma, who bled for 2-3 years and helped us a lot in the growing revenues per store here, their local operation was sold. ProPharma put inventories there. Obviously, when inventories are there, we give back some of the revenues, but now we have stabilized that. And we are much better today than we were when this process started. So we have a very profitable operation there, very high revenues per store. So the whole meltdown of Brazil Pharma was very positive to us. But whatever loss we had initially when the operation started, when the stores were sold and started being refurbished and started receiving inventories, it's done. We have already consolidated and already maintained the share. In the South, we also gained share from 5.9 to 6.6. In the Northeast, 100 bits gain from 4.7 to 5.7%. PJ, can talk about the growth here. So in 2017, our consolidated revenues grew 17.1%. I think this is a very consistent figure. In the fourth quarter, we grew 14.2%, but we had a negative calendar effect of 80 bps. So we'll be talking on a neutral calendar basis at a 15% top-line growth. This is kind of where we stand by now. When we break down by business, in the drugstore business, we grew 16% in the year and 13.1% in the quarter, which, corrected by the calendar, we'll be talking around 14% in the quarter. Well, for bio, grew a meteorical 53% in the year and 49% in the quarter. When we look at our mix from 16 to 17, then the main highlight has been OTC. They grew from 17.6 to 18%. At the expense of HPC, which contracted from 26.7 to 25.9%. I think for the first semester, the contraction of HPC was structural. It was related to a cross-channel competition, but we believe we have been able to stabilize that. When we look at the quarter, we still see a contraction in HPC, but what happened here is much more seasonal than structural. We had a colder and rainier summer, And obviously, especially the holiday period is very important for HPC. People buy a lot of sunscreen and other products, and it was not a very good period because of the climate. And you can also see that by looking at OTC that increased 17.1 fourth quarter last year to 17.9 this year. So we had kind of an opposite dynamics here, but right now it's more seasonality than it is structural. On the next chart, then we can see our comps in further detail. So as I mentioned, we grew in the year 17.1% on a consolidated basis and 3.1% for mature stores. So mature stores grew in line with inflation last year. When we break down by quarter, we see a tougher fourth quarter with 14.2% total growth, which would have been 15% on a neutral calendar basis, with mature store growth of 0.8%, which would be 1.6% on a neutral calendar basis. So we can talk where we are now, and this is where we end the year and where we start this year, is we are 1% to 2% below inflation at our mature stores. Obviously, this is not the first time it happens. Life is not a straight line. The only place you can find a straight line is in the models you all develop. But in reality, we have periods slightly better, slightly tougher, and we're facing a period slightly below inflation. This has also to do with cannibalization. I mean, if you have a stronger vintage, it's likely you would have cannibalized slightly more. And last year, vintage was the strongest since 2012. There is some more competition. We saw a lot of new store openings by competitors, especially in the fourth quarter. And as skeptical as we may be on the future of those growth sprees that we don't see as sustainable, obviously, it affects to some extent our comps. So we are 1 to 2% below inflation. We have a lot of initiatives in the way. And what we would like to see happening is a convergence towards inflation. We will see the convergence or not, time will tell, but we're not just looking, we're doing a lot of things for that to be possible. On the next page, then we can talk about the gross margin. We saw in the year a gross margin pressure of 80 bps. This was widely anticipated. As you know, in 2016, with a 12% price increase, we had a huge inflationary gains. So we lost 60 bps only in terms of inflationary gain, because this year, the pricing last year, price increase was 3%. The other aspect here is that interest rates are now lower than they were in 16. So the net present value adjustment, which is a non-cash effect, it's a non-economical effect, but it's part of the accounting here, this is another 20 bps of pressure. So still, if you looked, if we took away the NPV adjustment, we were talking only the price increase effect of 60 bps. When we look in the quarter, and here the inflationary gain is no longer in the picture, we see a 20 bps price, 20 bps gross margin contraction. This is exactly due to the net present value adjustment, which represents 20 bps. On top of that, for bio, who has lower margin and grows more, so it has a negative mix effect here, but the margin was also lower than the previous year, pressure gross margins by 30 bps. But we posted other gross margin gains of 30 bps that allowed us to maintain the constant cash margin, which means beyond the not counting the NPV adjustment, or a 20 bps contraction with the NPV adjustment. We also had a relatively high cash cycle in the fourth quarter, 49.1 days versus 44.7 days last year. I think we have two calendar effects here. One is the end of period day, it's not a good one, so accounts receivables go up. And the other factor is that because of lower sales from 80 bps of calendar for the quarter, also inventory rotations penalized. We expect overall to navigate this year with a cash cycle slightly better than what we saw last year, especially in the end of the year. On page 11, naturally we can discuss here the highlight of the period, which was expense dilution. So we achieved both in the year and the quarter 70 bps of expense dilution. In the quarter, 30 bps came from G&A dilution. Obviously, we had a very heavy G&A on the fourth quarter 16. But then we also gained 10 bps on labor, 10 bps on marketing, 10 bps on logistics, and 10 bps of dilution from 4Bio. We had 10 bps of other gains. We had a 10 bps pressure from electricity. But what we can see is that this efficiency gain has been widespread through a multitude of different lines. It's not one silver bullet. It's not one drastic action. I mean, we're talking about several different and sustainable actions. Our expectation is to maintain this level of expense control as we enter 2018. And finally, we posted an EBITDA margin pressure of 20 bps in the year. If you take out the NPV adjustment, there is no cash, we'll be talking a flat margin on a consolidated basis. And for the retail business, in which posted an 8.4% EBITDA margin, not counting for bio here, if we take out the NPV effect, we'll be talking about a 10 bp margin gain in the year. So, in spite of huge gross margin pressures, we were able to maintain constant EBITDA margin at our retail operation. The difference is that that EBITDA, which before was inflation boosted, now it's a fully structural one. So I think this is a much more consistent number than the one we saw last year. And then in the quarter, our adjusted EBITDA increased by 50 bps, stemming from expense dilution, as I previously mentioned. Next page, our net margin was 3.7 for the year, 3.6 for the quarter. So we see on the fourth quarter a 70 bps expansion versus last year. We posted in the year 0.2 million of non-recurring gain, which was 2.4 gain in the quarter, which is tax credits from previous years. We had posted in the first quarter a 2.2 non-recurring expense. So the net effect for the year is 200,000 reais positive non-recurring expenses. Page 14, we had a negative free cash flow in the year around 60 million, which is, I would say, a good number for a company growing as much as we are. It's almost a neutral free cash flow generation. So we generated 850 million resources on operation. After the cash cycle and other assets and liabilities, the operating cash flow was 590 million, which almost fully funded 640 million in investments. And in the end, after interest on capital and taxes paid, we're talking about a 211 million negative total cash flow. On page 15, we see our share gain. We had our share performed very well last year, 51% appreciation versus 23% for the Ibovespa. Ibovespa had a good year, but our shares did better. But for me, what matters is the long-term picture here. When for those investors who entered at the Drogasil IPO, they have seen total shareholder return of 33% per year. Those who invested in the Rai IPO have seen 36% total shareholder return per year here. So, and believe it or not, we have a bunch of shareholders who are around, who maintain or increase their holdings, who have been with us since the Drogasil or since the Raya IPOs. I'll now pass to Marcilio for him to talk about sustainability and put the year and our future perspectives in perspective.
Okay, thank you, Eugenio. Before to go to about the 2017-2018, I will talk about a little bit about sustainability. Okay, we closed last year our essence, our future values. Then we also stood better how the company can help the society, can help all the place that make business in the sustainability business. We closed with this in three different pillars, and I will brief a little bit about each pillar. Okay, the first pillar is to take care of people's health. This is like our essence. We take care of the people. We love that. We don't talk. Just take care about our employees and the quality of life of our employees, but look for promote the health and the treatment for our customers also. And this helps us also to make a guidance to where you invest your social initiatives in the future. This is the first pillar. The second pillar is to take care of business health. We know how important it is to keep the company with good profitability without big debts, but we need also to encourage your dialogue with the stakeholders, not only financial, but also with the vendors, with the government. and to develop the employees for the new stage that we're looking for our company. The third pillar is to take care of the plant's health. We know that we don't have a lot of externalities about our business. We know that we don't change a lot about the plant's health, but it's important for us when in open stores work with all of our construction affect the environment and to reduce our waste and to reduce our environmental impact in distribution process also with our threats for these things. We know this is good for us to follow this every year. We make a report, we call the sustainability report. We are planning to do this every year and you guys can follow our the next steps in all these three pillars for the future. Let's go to the business in page 17 here. As Eugenio told you, we really believe you have the best year for your life in 2017. Okay, we knew in the past 2017 it would be a challenge, not only because the price increased, but also if you look in 2016, we have the price increase, and we have also a very weak competition in same states in Brazil. When you talk about Bahia, for example, compete against Santana, or maybe in Pernambuco, compete against Big Bang, and in the Distrito Federal in Brasília, compete against Rosario. It was easy for us in 2016, 2015, and you took advantage about this competition against Bayer Pharma. We know that in 2017, all the competitors are much more strong, and we know we don't have the advantage also the price increase. Then we started to work since the end of 2015 and understand better the productivity in the stores level to reduce all the expense in the lines, not only in people, but using reduced expense also in all the lines in the P&L. We did a very, very good job in this, and we really believe that the number of expense that we have right now, this can keep with us for the future also. The best thing in this point is that we do all these changes which are best number in NPS, Net Promoter Score. This is that we are proud about that. We achieved a lot of milestones, good milestones. We opened 210 stores. Not only 210 stores, we opened stores, 15 to 20 stores every month, which is good quality, better than our legacy, okay? We started and introduced the new identity for Drogasil. This is good because we needed to remodelate Drogasil, and Drogasil is much better how to work the experience for the customers. We already 81 stores red, and if you can visit the stores that is in Itaim area here, you can visit the stores. It's much better than the past, and they're ready for the future in the stores. We relaunched the Raya loyalty program, and we launched the Drogasil program, loyalty program, which is using the dynamic technology. We really believe you can use all this data to use in the customer behavior to make the relationship with the customer. You'll be good for the future. And we closed the implementation to a new pricing platform. We are making a rollout right now in this quarter, and it will help us to price better in the front end of the stores. We also work in our core enables. We achieved a record low level of stockout, and not only this, we achieved the record also in the how to the NPS, as I told you, but you are looking very, very close to understand better how you can serve the customer in the store, how you can serve the customer in the counter to when the store take with the prescription for us, how you can give for the customers the best deal for their medicines. What's good we did in that year also to close the cultural transformation that I told you during the year. We closed all the communication of the new culture for the company, and this helped us for the future. Then let's go for the next page. What are we working right now for the future, not only for 2018, but also for the next years. For the expansion plan, we are planning to increase a little bit right now. We are going to 240 stores 2018, 2019. We create a platform to do this. We know how difficult it is in Brazil to open a company that you can grows organically in all the states in Brazil. Brazil is very different to go to the northeast and the south. We know how to do that. We have a people, process, and system, and not only find the right location, but how to handle the stores. Then we increase the number. We know that you can use this number for the future also. We hired a consulting company, the bank, to help us to write a new strategy plan for the future. The plan is work very, very strongly how to deliver for a customer a digital experience. We know in the future the customer uses the cellular to take the decisions. We need to use all the advantage that you have, which is all the capillarity of our stores, to use the digital experience of the customer together for us in the future. We know this is a journey. It's difficult to do that, and you start very strong this year. You can see all the change that you're doing for this year. The other point I understand better is how to use your healthcare platform. When you bought 4Bill, we know 4Bill will be a new business for us. It will be a new entry, a new market for us. Then I understand better for building two paths in two different ways. How to understand better the health business, and how you can integration better the 4Bill business in all our 1,600 stores that we have today. Then I am very optimistic about our business. We really believe that in the results will be much better in the future, because you have a very consistent business and a very consistent market also. Thank you. Eugenio will stress some points about our activities, and after that, I'll be here for the questions. Thank you very much.
Okay, so we have here our earnings calendar for the year, and also we highlight some of the conferences we have already scheduled for the upcoming months. So we will publish the first quarter on the 2nd of May 2018. We generally do it inside the month, except this time because of calendar issues we're doing in the beginning of May. We will publish the second quarter July 30th and the third quarter on October 30th. We have many upcoming investor conferences that we will attend. So March 12 and 13, Gabriel will be at the Itaú BBA Latin Consumer Event in London. April 3rd and 4th in Brazil will be all at the Bradesco Conference. April 10 and 11, I will be at the Latam Investor Forum in Asia, Hong Kong and Singapore, with Bradesco. May 16 and 17, will also be Marcelo and myself in New York at the Itaú Conference. And finally, June 5 to 7, I'll be at the Call Jams Conference of Merrill Lynch in California. So we are now open for your questions. Thank you very much.
The floor now is open for questions. At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the hashtag key. Mr. Joseph Giordano from JP Morgan would like to make a question.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Thanks for taking my question. I would like to continue exploring two topics we discussed in the Portuguese conference call concerning the mature store same-store sales. So I would like to understand a little bit better how the new pricing tool may help to bring back the growth to close to inflation levels. Thank you.
Joseph, thanks for the question. I mean, as I mentioned, we although last year we grew overall mature stores in line with inflation, towards the end of the year the number was below inflation. Already in the third quarter, even though we published a number ahead of inflation, if you consider that there was the Olympic Games in Rio, the Olympic Games in Rio in the previous year, discounting that effect, we were already kind of underwater in the third quarter. So we ended the year with, let's say, 1 to 2% below inflation. And that's the trend we have as we start 2018. We have several initiatives lined up to try to convert back. I mean, we're not defeating that because our competitors do also listen to our conference call. But I think the pricing platform is one of the initiatives that can help us, especially in the front store. We believe we had much lower price granularity than we should have had. Today, if you came to São Paulo and compared prices in Morumbi Shopping with a very low-income store in other places, I would say that the price would typically be very similar. And that's wrong. I mean, you have to be more competitive when you have more price elasticity, where you have a tougher environment, and you can make more money where you have less competition. So the pricing platform will allow us to do that, to have much bigger granularity. So it's one of the elements, but it's not the only element. There are other things in store that we're preparing for the next months.
Thank you.
Mr. Guilherme Assis of Brasil Plural would like to make a question.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for taking my question. I'd like to follow up on the subject of same-store sales for mature stores. Can you guys comment a little bit on the revamping plan for Drogasil stores and if you foresee any potential positive impact on the same-store sales growth base for the mature stores?
Guilherme, can you repeat the question? I couldn't understand, sorry.
Okay. Can you hear me better now?
Yes, I can.
Okay. So can you comment a little bit on the revamping plan for the Drogasil stores and whether if you think that it could help to lever up the same-store sales for mature stores?
Okay, yes, I think the revamping of Drogasil, I think it's a very important initiative. In the stores where we do it, we generally see an impact. I think it's a much more updated store look and feel, lined up with the brand positioning, better customer experience. So I think it's a huge step ahead. I think the Drogasil format was kind of tired. But having said that, it's not it's something that takes a couple of years to happen. I mean, we are accelerating that. So we validated the format more to the middle and or end of the year. So we had a relatively small number of stores refurbished or already open with the new format. I think this year will be a big step ahead. Several of our main stores are already being renovated as we speak, and I think this can help. But it's not realistic to imagine that we have every store done in the year. So it's a more progressive effect as opposed to a big bang.
Guilherme, it's much more difficult to remodel in the store than the open store sometimes. Then it's a journey. We did right now only 81 stores, but 30 is new stores and 50 is remodelated. We are doing this every year. I don't know how many stores we can do, and it's very difficult to figure out how is the increase in help us in the same stores. We are sure that if you don't do this, we'll have a problem in the future. This is the point with the remodelated stores, okay?
Okay, that's clear. Thank you. And if I may just follow up, the IMS released drug sales data for January in Brazil, and we saw a pickup. I know there was a negative calendar impact on the fourth quarter, but it seems that sales are actually rebounding a little bit. Do you take that as a potential upside to your same-store sales for the first quarter of the year?
This is a figure that it's difficult to take into account on a month-to-month basis. There is a lot of noise in the number. So, for example, IMS it tracks data from large chains and it tracks data from wholesalers for wholesalers selling to small chains. And obviously, anything that you see, for example, if a small chain is getting ready for the price increase, they are boosting inventories, that will show up as a market increase. So if you look at IMS data year on year, it's okay, but the noise moves out. But month to month, this is not that data that we take into account.
Okay, that's clear. That's good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Luciano from Bradesco BBI would like to make a question.
Good morning, Marcelo. Good morning, Eugenio. Sorry, good afternoon, actually. As your comment, Eugenio, life is not a straight line, and for the questions that we are having on same-store sales, life is much, much, much easier when same-store sales of mature stores is in line above inflation, and it gets, trickier when it's not. So that's, again, my question is also there. It's very clear to me that you have the execution and the balance sheet and the excess returns, to continue to generate value, even if same-store sales of mature stores remains below inflation for some time, right? But again, it gets trickier because it depends of offsetting factors like the SG&A right now, the intensity of competition, and your own decisions, right, to keep accelerating openings. In that sense, could you, in the best of the possibility, I'm not asking for numbers, I'm asking for, conceptual guidance or conceptual directions here to understand better how to interpret your results along 2018 and 2019. For example, should we find normal to see the same-store sales of mature stores below below inflation for many quarters of 2018, or this was just a separate event that happened in the fourth quarter of 2017? Another example would be acceptable in your plans to see if this same-store sales of mature stores level remains, low, to see at some point some margin compression, and it would be okay to your plans of expansion to see that kind of thing. And in that case, what kind of levels should we, find normal? What kind of level should we raise a yellow flag that perhaps your store opening, your expansion plans should change because of, the conditions of the market, competition, and whatnot, reflecting on the same store sales of mature stores? Sorry for the long question, but it's a conceptual one. Please help the best way you can. Thank you.
Okay, Lucero, thanks for the question. I'll start with a long-term view, and then I'll try to bring it to more immediate concerns. I mean, we have the whole focus of the company is long term. I mean, we are driving in the industry consolidation in Brazil of a sector that expands at a very fast pace because of the age of the population, in a sector in which we have only 12% of market share, but we are gaining more and more and more, and the opportunities, they abound. So our view is structural. We are not here to optimize the year or to optimize the quarter. We are here to create long-term value. If we can do that along with short-term margin expansion, we have nothing against it. But the quarter margin doesn't drive our decision. What drives our decision is the long-term value creation. So this is the backdrop for everything here. I mean, if you look at mature stores, I mean, it's not easy in general for the mature stores to maintain productivity because we are opening more stores. And there's cannibalization. We manage cannibalization. We make sure new stores marginally add enough to pay the cost of capital. But still, cannibalization penalizes the mature store. In a certain way, the most successful we are in the expansion, the toughest will be for the existing stores because they will donate customers, but the new stores, they will add enough marginal revenues to make economic sense. But in spite of that, because of the market growth, because we have been gaining competition, we have in general seen way more performance in line with inflation than below inflation. But this is not the first, if you look back, this is not the first quarter below inflation that we have. It doesn't mean that we'll stay always below inflation, but also I don't have a clue if you always will be able to grow mature stores in line with inflation and add 200 plus stores. So far we have been able to do. Will it be possible? No, we hope it will, but I can't swear about that. And even if it isn't, it doesn't mean that we lose margins because revenues are shifting from one store to the other. But the new stores are adding more to the pie than they were adding before. So we believe even with one quarter, two quarters, couple quarters, or even if we had a year below inflation, but at this kind of pace, obviously, if you have zero, if you have negative, it's different. But at this kind of magnitude, which is a slight difference, we're talking 1-2%, I don't think it should get in the way of maintaining our margins. I don't think it will pressure margins. I think we have other levers. We have things on the expense that we're doing. We have G&A dilution. It could be the case that we can have a gross margin increase. So you have to look at the whole picture. And we feel comfortable with the margins we are. We believe we'll be around the same margin. Around could be flat, could be 10 bps low, could be 10 bps up. Doesn't really matter, but I don't think we are contracting margin. We should be in this kind of level, but we should be creating a ton of value with this kind of expansion. Another thing here is that competition has also been cyclical. We have been in the past cycles of a lot of new store openings, but if you look at history, we have been the only company who has been able to grow sustainably and create value in this market. Simple as that. You can't name, well, that could be regional chains who have only grown in the markets. I mean, I think they were able to raise value as well. But you can't pick a single company over the last 10 or 15 years who tried to grow at a large scale on a multi-market basis besides us who has created value. What happened is that those companies faced entry barriers in a lot of new markets. The store selection is just not the best because of lack of analytics, lack of expansion, too much hurry. And what happens is that the additional stores, they deliver revenue per store below the legacy stores. The margin contracts. At some point, they have to reduce growth. They have to clean up. So it's the famous chicken flight that Marcelo, the term that Marcelo has coined. I mean, you grow and you stop. You grow and you stop. Everybody has been doing chicken flights over time. We saw now an acceleration again. I really believe it's another chicken flight. Because when we look, the stores competitors are opening. They're coming late to markets that are very difficult right now. I mean, what can the fifth brand in São Paulo add to the table? They can't have the best locations. Competing in São Paulo versus Raya, Drogasil, Drogaria São Paulo, and Onofre is no walk in the park. When we entered difficult markets like Porto Alegre, Belo Horizonte, Curitiba, we faced a ton of pain in the beginning. But we faced at a much earlier stage. It was only us and the incumbent. Here we're talking São Paulo. Four established and good players, and any new entrant has to add something new to the table on top of these five. Can they add better locations? Can they add a better operation? Can they create a brand out of nowhere? I'm highly skeptical of that. And it's not only São Paulo. You go to Recife. We enter Recife as the first new challenger to compete with Pagmenos, who's the leader there. 4 years ago, it's different now. Today, whoever enters Recife is the fourth or fifth chain entering the market, competing against Pagmenos, competing against Drogasil, competing against Drogaria São Paulo, who came before. So can they add something new to the table and create value? I mean, I, based on my experience, based on what I have done, I doubt. And by the way, when you look at the profitability, when you look at the growth, when you look at the margins, I mean, you see that the company is weaker and not stronger. So regardless if the company has deep pockets or if they don't, at some point they have to fix it. Generally, the bigger the company, the more structured, the best the manager, the more disciplined they have to be. So a spree of openings that don't create value, it's a matter of time for that to be halted and corrected. So it's another wave, but I don't think it's a structural addition that represents what we'll see in the next 1, 2, 3, 4 years. I think we'll see that, then we'll see correction of that. History is very clear on that regard. But yes, even though we maintain, even if we operate a full year at this kind of level, 1 or 2 below inflation, which is not necessarily true because we're doing a lot of things that could help us, I still think we can defend our margins.
Thank you, Eugenio. So just another question then, a simpler one. You have this new strategic plan process that you're starting this year. The first pillar, if I understand, is to look at potential ways to accelerate even further your store openings. Did I get it right? I mean, you'd be looking then at the possibility of opening more than 240 in future years. Is that the right interpretation? Thank you.
Luciano, at this point, I cannot confirm that. What we're doing is, when you look at our strategy, we have to look at every element that we have. So we have been challenging what we're doing. So they will look on a market by market basis, how's competition doing, how much market share we have, how have been the IRs in the recent expansion, and we will be challenging ourselves. Can we do more? Or even if you do the same, can you do the same but with a different breakdown of stores per market? Can we do? Can we have any new formats for, let's say, store selling only 500,000 reais and not having to sell 800,000 reais? What are the next steps with PharmaZil? Is that the final answer for the C-class market? So I think it's way more than just increasing a number. To increase your number, we don't need this kind of structural revision. Will that conduce to a bigger number? I don't have a clue. What I can tell you is that our guidance for 18 and 19, it's already laid on the table. It's 240 stores per year. And yes, we believe we can sustain a fast pace of growth way beyond that, but we don't have any numbers right now. The whole strategy review will help us fine-tuning that, and in the end, it's more about the how than it is about the how much.
Yeah. And I really believe that the consensus can help us to write the agenda for the future, and you, in the future, we can share the agenda for you also, okay? We know we have opportunities that the market has for us, and you only that the consultants will help us to organize this agenda and you work for the agenda for the future.
Okay, guys. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mrs. Julie from Bloomberg Intelligence would like to make a question.
Hello, thank you for taking my question. I wanted to ask you about e-commerce a bit. When we look at some of the expectations for growth in the Brazil e-commerce market, some of the highest growth areas over the next few years are in personal care and consumer health. And so I wanted to ask you where you stand now there in that channel and what your plan is over the next year or two. Thanks.
Okay, Judy, thanks for the question. I think this is a very important topic. Digital for us is certainly a huge priority, but digital goes way beyond e-commerce. E-commerce generally means moving goods from a DC or from a store to a customer house. And yes, we do that. It accounts for something like 0.5. We sold, I think, last year 90 million in e-commerce for a company with total revenues in around 14 billion. So it's dismal. When you look at the overall market, e-commerce in itself is very small. And when we look around the world in this industry, in the U.S. or Europe, there hasn't been a huge migration towards e-commerce. But having said that, there are customers who want to do e-commerce, who want to receive at home, and we are progressing towards that. We launched a new website. We launched our apps. We changed our picking process from a specific mini DC to a normal DC. So over the next 2 years, we'll be able to have every DC in every region as an e-commerce platform to serve those regions. So we have advanced on that, and we'll keep advancing more. But the most important thing here is digital. It's not only e-commerce. Digital means that the consumer will interact with us, will start his interaction on a digital basis with an app, regardless if he's buying at the store, if he's buying for us to deliver to his home. So we believe digital can remove several of the pain points at our stores. For example, in the U.S., we've seen click and collect as a huge value offering for consumers. A huge adoption for that, and this is great because let's say you still want to come to the store, but you don't want to pick a line at the pharmacy counter. You can pre-order, you can have it all fixed, so you just collect your medicine and you can browse the beauty selection. In the end, we believe that the stores will always remain the cornerstone of the consumer experience here. As long as the store is well located, it offers experience, it offers service, it offers convenience. This is a segment in which our core consumers, they love the store, seniors and women, generally, especially mothers, because of beauty and things like that. But some consumers don't want to come to the store, so we'll be able to offer an out-of-store experience, which is better than we offer today, and we use digital to enhance the in-store experience, removing bottlenecks, allowing you, for example, to scan products and get more information for this the product. So part of our, so one of the main vectors of this strategic plan we just started is the digital transformation. So we believe a lot in that, but we don't believe in e-commerce disruption in terms of, I still think when you look 5 or 10 years ahead, the biggest portion of our sales will be inside the store, but they will be initiated and powered by digital, and that I think is completely different.
Thank you. I appreciate that perspective. It's really helpful. And if I could ask one more on the selling expenses, we got some nice dilution in expenses in the fourth quarter, and really for all of 2017. I wanted to ask what the couple of main drivers of that were. The lower selling expenses as a percent of revenue, and then if you think you can get a similar improvement in 2018.
Okay, I think what we did on the expense side is not a silver bullet doing a huge thing on one element. I think we are in a certain way firing in all cylinders here. So we had improvements in labor, we had improvements in GNA, we renegotiated with suppliers and reduced acquiring fees. So there's a bunch of different, we have been able to renegotiate rental contracts. We have had this, initiatives on energy efficiency, like putting LED lamps in our stores, which are more efficient. So it's a lot of small and consistent efforts that we have been doing for quite a while, and we were fortunate to materialize last year when we mostly needed. I think we went down a step, and a big one, but I don't see this as a ladder that we can continue to get this kind of dilution year after year. I think very likely now we stabilize that platform. Obviously, we will try to gain some more over that level, but that we'll be talking marginal gains and not another, not climbing, not going down another step in the ladder.
Got it. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you.
Sir Ricardo from HSBC would like to make a question.
Hello, Eugenio, Marcilio, thanks for taking my question. So just to follow up on the whole digital discussion that we've been having for a while and on the benefits that you expect on the consumer experience and also on the pricing, have you noticed any of your competitors doing the same as developed as you are, or do you still think that competition is way behind you guys on this? Thank you.
No, I mean, I think everybody is seeing it coming. I mean, you have to be deaf and blind not to see digital today. So we don't claim the privilege to be the only company trying to work on digital, but one thing is the what, the other thing is the how. So I think the resources we have are different. We have capacity to invest. I think we have the best people in the industry. We have proprietary platforms. So the most challenging thing about digital is not having a great website. You can buy a platform in the market to do the best website possible or best app possible. The challenge is really integrating the app and the website to the ERP, to the store pharmacy system, to the store checkout system. And because we have all those proprietary platforms, we control every nut and bolt of our execution, and we believe we can move fast on that execution, and we can do more things faster than we believe the others will be able to do. Another thing is that when you look what this market will look like in 5 or 10 years, I mean, everybody will have advanced, every large company will have advanced in digital. But when you think about small players, independents, small chains, many of them, they don't have the resources to do this kind of thing. So I think digital can really separate the men from the boys here. We won't be the only chain to have digital solutions. Our main competitors, all or most of them will have. Then it's a matter of what we do better than them, and it's our mission to do something better than them. We will do. But I think the top guys will build a huge gap over the ones behind. And this becomes another driver of consolidation. If digital is important to the market, this will be another driver of consolidation.
Thank you, Eugenio.
Thank you, sir.
As a reminder, as to ask a question, please press star 1. This will be the final announcement. In order to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. It appears to be no further questions. Now I will turn the conference back to the company for their final remarks.
Okay, so first of all, I'd like to thank you all for attending this conference call, and I'd like to put some of the issues we discussed into perspective here. I mean, I think we made clear this was a very good year for us with robust top-line growth for the average of the year. We defended very well the gross margin pressure stemming from the huge inflationary gains of 16, which were unable to be repeated. But because of strong productivity gains, expense dilution of several different lines, we were able to defend our margins. So again, if you look just the retail margin without the NPV adjustment, which is an accounting adjustment only on a cash basis, we gained 10 basis in a year that we had everything to lose because the gross margins could only come down. So I think we are stronger now than we were before, because before we had an EBITDA, which was inflation boosted. Now we have an EBITDA, which is fairly structural, and it's a similar EBITDA to the one we had before. And all these initiatives in cost containment and efficiency gains, they were not doing at the expense of the customer. We measure very closely level of negative evaluations that the customer do in our stores. We have a device in every checkout for that. And customer evaluation, negative evaluations went down, positive evaluations went up. So we have slightly less labor in store, but we have more process efficiency, and the consumer doesn't see that. So this is the best efficiency gain. It means it's sustainable. In the year, we grew 17% to 3% of mature store growth in line with inflation. We opened 210 new stores, 10 more than the guidance. And this was the strongest vintage since 2012, so this is also very encouraging. But as I mentioned, we ended the year with a tougher scenario in terms of sales. We were trailing inflation between 1 and 2%. And this is the scenario we carry into the beginning of the year. And from here onwards, it's our job to try to converge back to inflation. We will be able to do so. It depends on a myriad of factors. I can't swear that this can happen, but we're working on that. And even if we remain somewhat below inflation, this kind of magnitude, with a solid expansion coming into play, I think we can do well in the year. We can defend our margins, and I don't think it has to be an issue for the company. I mean, again, when you look our history, we have had many years of in line or above inflation, but we have had other years going below inflation, and that doesn't necessarily mean a catastrophe. The only place where a straight line exists is in investor models and analyst models. Life is not like that. So the important thing is our long-term focus is the value we can create over the next decade by exploring the structural tailwinds we enjoy, like the aging population, like leading the consolidation of a fragmented market. We are starting a new cycle of strategic planning, focusing on things like digital, reassessing our expansion, looking at formats, and looking at healthcare. We have a very unique platform in the market called RT Health with 4 Bio and Universe. And what more can we do? What other services we can create for payers? Because this is a managed care business, specialties of the managed care business, just like in the U.S. or just like in Europe. So we have a lot on our table. There are tactical initiatives to improve execution, to improve sales. There are a lot of strategic initiatives that are start. But when we look longer term, we will be very optimistic on the company and very optimistic on the business. Finally, I would like to thank for the support of our long-term shareholders. Believe it or not, we have several companies, several firms who have been with us since our IPOs, either High or Drew Brazil, and who haven't sold a single share, have actually bought some of them actually more shares, have gone through ups and downs, and so we're hugely appreciative of the trust. Thank you very much, and hope to catch up with you on our upcoming conferences and roadshows. Bye-bye.
Thank you. High Drogazil conference call is now finished. Have a nice day. Closing and disconnection.